thank you. I'm very glad I sat in the Mary Harris submission, the quiet submission, because there are some things that I do want to take up with you about what was said. So, but just in terms of a preliminary statement, I guess particularly bearing in mind the clerk's evidence, I do want to say that I think there is a completely different angle from which you can come at this, and I hope to demonstrate to you that I think it will make it simpler and it will provide an easier, simpler, tested environment in which the necessary protocols and procedures can be developed. So I think we're all aware of the environmental changes that have happened. You know, the collection of access card information wasn't even possible 20 years ago. And it's miles bigger than that. We all know that, you know, everything from gate recognition to, you know, every transaction you do on the internet can be collected and used. So just very, very briefly, and I can come back to this if you want me to, but the context is that there is now the possibility of absolutely huge collection, and the Parliament environment has to tackle that in some way. So what has, I think, lain behind this particular incident that's sparked this Privileges Committee hearing, and has lain behind, for example, the ACC incident, is that there's been a failure to recognise information as a huge asset. And with that, and I'm being very brief here, comes liabilities, and with that comes risks. If you look at the ACC example, I think you can see pretty clearly that they simply failed to recognise that their information was their major asset, and they weren't dealing with it properly. There wasn't all the surrounding things that would be needed to deal with it properly. So these sorts of changes, the environmental changes, can put huge pressure on agencies, and we've seen some pretty good examples of that in the last couple of years. Often you see ad hoc responses, people struggling, perhaps not making decisions on a political basis. So I won't go into that. That's not my business here. But I think, as I said, things can be made easier and simpler, and we don't need to reinvent the wheel on this. For example, the ACC inquiry came up with a set of really good suggestions on governance and leadership, and then once you get that right, you get the management and the systems right. And again, I'm skipping over a whole lot of detail here. And there are well-established laws and guidance and principles in the Privacy Act and the Official Information Act, which have been well-tested. So, for example, just to take one example, the life cycle approach to information can be really useful. You know, who collects it, who keeps it, is it stored, is it shared and disclosed, is it disposed of, all of those kinds of things need to inform. So, and the key thing is having a purpose for the information, and this is where I hope you can see that I'm coming at it from a really quite different angle here that I think will be useful. You need to know why you're collecting it. You need to be open and upfront about it. The people whose information is collected need to know about it. You're not operating so much with information. It's not so much a role-driven context, and there's been a lot of talk about that this morning. You're really operating in a purpose-driven context and in a context of who actually holds the information and not owns it. And I'm going to come back to that ownership point in a minute. So, and also, a lot of people were upset, weren't they? You've got to keep people in the loop. Whatever your systems and protocols are, people need to know what's happening with their information, who's going to see it and disclose it. So we want to avoid situations where people are taken by surprise. Now, coming to the point of ownership, I have to say that we, in our information law context, do not regard ownership as a useful concept. We actually think it's something of a blind alley, a cul-de-sac. And Sir Grant Hammond yesterday in his evidence made the same point. I think he made it in passing, so you may not have picked up on it strongly.
No, I don't think there's any real disagreement in that concept, is there?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about ownership just right now, so I thought I needed to make that really clear. Okay. Generally speaking, I mean, take the example of a doctor's office, you know. Think of the information that doctor holds. He doesn't own it. The patient doesn't own it. maybe the lab, does the lab own the lab tests? Does the x-ray person own the x-rays? You know, I won't go on about that since clearly, Mr. Chairman, you've taken the point, but it's not going to be a particularly useful way to structure it, in my view. The other point that you actually asked us about was the question of metadata. I think from looking at some of the records from this committee, I understand that you have heard many times that metadata is not a particularly useful concept. Again, this is a slightly lesser point, but metadata is, it's the fashionable term at the moment, rather than something that needs to be used in any significant way. So, I guess what we would say is that we need to approach it from the point of view of saying, okay, you have a very large amount of information. The discussion this morning has already drawn out how complex that is and how many different ways you can come at it. Because of my background, I'm very conscious of that. You know, cabinet ministers, MPs, different environments that you're operating in. But I guess what we're saying, and of course we are happy to assist with this as required, is that the information, from our point of view, of the main sort of information we're interested in is information about people. As it happens, I think most of the information we're talking about in this context is in fact about people. And that the principles in the Privacy Act and all of the legal structure that applies to that, whether it be sort of disclosure, access, withholding grounds, all of those kinds of things, as we've said in our submission, will provide the structure within which you will be able to manage in the parliamentary context the information in a useful way. So that's my preliminary statement. Happy to answer questions.
I also found your analogy in 5.2 quite helpful. The reader's trial and court proceedings. So if it's related to a court proceeding as part of the judicial function, Privacy Act excluded, if it's administrative, maybe not. And have you actually had experience in dealing with that particular issue?
Yes, we do in the complaints arena from time to time have to deal with that distinction. And it hasn't caused us a lot of difficulty, as far as I'm aware.
No, it's actually been tested in court as well, Mr. Chairman. And yes, the distinction is relatively clear. No, it's a different case, S and Ministry of Justice.
Well, I'm drawing on my background as Cabinet Secretary as much as my Privacy Commissioner background at this point, because I guess that's what you're asking here. I have an instinctive reluctance, as you know, a former Cabinet Secretary, to the idea of Parliament and Cabinet being subject to particular legislation. I mean, the Cabinet Manual is, you know, in a sense, what I was responsible for, you know, putting into the position that it's in now, and I think that in the general sense that New Zealand has actually operated, you know, surprisingly to outsiders, well in operating without, you know, a written constitution in one sense, although, you know, we do have plenty of constitutional law. So, you know, the short point is that I would personally, speaking more personally than as Privacy Commissioner, would be slightly reluctant to see us going down the track of legislation that would then be subject to judicial examination and so forth. So I come from a particular background on that, so you have to take that into account.
I agree with you.
As Privacy Commissioner, I think that you know, in a sense, the Privacy Commission itself is not subject to the Privacy Act, but we apply the privacy principles to ourselves as strongly as we possibly can, obviously. So I think that it's potential, there's a potential in a lot, taking the parallel, say, of the Cabinet Manual or Standing Orders, to have, you know, a self-applied ordinance to which, you would set standards for yourself and you would apply those. And I certainly think the principles in the Privacy Act, which are now very widely accepted internationally and, you know, increasingly even as we speak, you know, hundreds of countries, over 100 countries, I would suggest a trying applying the privacy principles as a protocol and, you know, holding yourselves to that standard, which I think works relatively well in the context of the Cabinet Manual so and Standing Orders, so why not try?
Look, you have to point out working out who has ownership of the information in this case. But until that, still got the question is who's got control of the right to release or not? That's the real issue. Who has the right to release it? Because clearly, like your medical circumstance, well, sure, it's in his data, it's in his data bank, it's in his office and all that, but he's got no right. He hasn't got control of
Well, the way it works is that we like to think of it in terms of the person who holds it as being, in, you know, in the act to the agency that holds the information is having to be the key person at the centre of an access request or a complaint or whatever. But I guess the thing to remember is that the Privacy Act then provides an extremely workable structure within which the rights of people over the information can be tested and they can be drawn out as to, you know, who should have access and to what they should have access. In the case of a mental patient, for example, sometimes it might not be a good idea for that patient to have complete access to their record because there would be information in it about what other people have said about them, which in turn is that person's information, you see what I mean? So there's an appeal process, you know, you can appeal to the Privacy Commissioner, obviously. It can, if necessary, go to the Human Rights Review Tribunal. So I'm, you know, skipping over it very fast. But I think what we're saying here is that there are some really simple principles which apply to who holds the information, and then you take it through the nicely set out principles and processes that will refine out who has an interest in this information legitimately, what are the relevant considerations, such as, you know, is it the Prime Minister or is it the Speaker or whatever it is? You know, does it contain a mixture of information about one person or another person? All of that gets teased out, and then there's the capacity to test that out in a complaint situation. I don't know if you've got anything to add to that.
Well, I haven't come to the conclusion at the end of that it's not a good idea to leave.
I've always held that view for quite a long time.
Yeah, well, that's not what I want to be out.
Mr. Critical, at the beginning, forgive me for that, but if you, I'm struggling to still understand that if you don't clarify the issue of ownership of information, then you have a body of information, and presumably you could have contestability over ownership.
No, ownership simply doesn't apply.
Well, then, so the alternative.
Well, you don't have to get to ownership in order to resolve these questions.
If you try and work out who owns the doctor's comments on a patient in their GP practice, you'll quickly see that it is a blind alley. It is much better to regard the information as a body, see who holds it, and then try and tease out all the interests that apply.
Can I ask yourself on that, though? Because, I mean, I never respected you, but there are some times more thinking about these issues than me. But if it's my computer as a member of Parliament, it should be my right of control over that information, not anyone else's. And I think that's the point that Dr. Graham's trying to get to here, that I'm not ready to delegate all of that control to someone else to apply the privacy principles to.
Well, I guess I'd have to say that if you sign up as a member of Parliament and then as a Cabinet Minister, then you do sign up to certain conditions under which you must operate.
Well, maybe I should go off the network.
Well, in today's world, that's the sort of choice that at the extreme end some people are making. But
if you're implying that as a member of parliament, I have automatically given up and devolved my issues as
no, absolutely not.
No.
What has happened is that you've joined a system where the information is held in a certain way, but you are protected by the Privacy Act with certain rights. And I mean, how you would tease out the distinctions that Mrs. Turia was calling on is really, really interesting, and it would be, probably the subject of some very refined thinking to tease that out exactly if it was tested in certain ways.
I understand the office of the clerk has got to in her advice to us earlier, and the parliamentary services staff themselves have got to the position that they're not going to release any information because no one has a right to this information unless they have the permission of the MP. They're not going to get some global permission to release.
Well, that is a simple working rule that that you can apply much of the time, but it's not sufficient in itself. I think it would be true to say that. It's, generally speaking, that's a good working rule. You know, if people have generated the information and it's held by somebody else, then generally speaking, you would have some rights over that information. So, but it's really a matter of teasing out what your rights are legally. I mean, Catherine may wish to comment on that.
Have you seen the new submissions made to this committee from the UK, Canada, and Australia?
No, the submissions are not public at the moment.
I'm not sure we'd be very happy that we table now, so you can provide a copy to you and look at if you want.
I
know if you want to provide a supplementary
study. I'd like to know what your views are.
Okay, well, we'd be happy to look at those. I guess I just want to come back to the point that I think that setting up the management of the information in the right way will help to resolve a lot of the concerns that you're expressing and have been expressed around the table.
Any other questions? I've got a question. In the context of medical practitioner information, how does the Privacy Act resolve that? Or does it just say there is a duty of confidence, therefore there is no right to that information?
The medical situation is quite complex because doctors' ethics and medical ethics generally apply a higher standard than the Privacy Act. But the Privacy Act, in simple terms, provides a patient to have access to their own information, and that nobody else would, generally speaking, have that right.
There is a very, very important principle of democracy here that parliaments need to rip off the scabs of corruption. And so we expect when we're doing that, and
The sort of information where MPs have, in the past exposed abuses and that sort of thing. That takes place within the parliamentary context, which I'm familiar with, and I absolutely think that that's got to continue because that's our defence against corruption and for democracy.
And the protection of our sources and the media sources against inappropriate disclosure.
Yes. There are protections in the Privacy Act for those very things.
Sorry.
No.